to CJLO 1690 AM here in Montreal.
For CJLO News, I'm Serena Abuljoud.
The administration has shown that they were never committed to getting a peaceful end to this encampment. Shame.
Shame!
We, the students, who have set up this encampment, have made it clear from its first day of inception that we are willing to pack up and go home so long as the university commits to divesting from companies complicit in war and genocide. McGill University invests approximately $9 million in weapons-related companies. Companies that manufacture missiles, jets, drones, and surveillance systems that are used daily to target and massacre Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip and the occupied territory.
After over 70 days of its setup, the Gaza Solidarity Encampment in McGill was dismantled on Wednesday by a private security firm in collaboration with the City of Montreal and the SPVM. Members of the encampment received an eviction notice around 4:30 a.m. that day. Deep Saini, the president of McGill University, said that a firm they had hired to investigate the camp had discovered 2 overdoses, discarded syringes, rat infestation, garbage, rotten food, fire risks, as well as flammable materials next to tents. However, in a press conference, a spokesperson for the encampment said that McGill mischaracterized the camp and has utilized photos of syringes that are present on the public street of Sherbrooke and pretended it was inside the camp. They also questioned the legal legitimacy of McGill's operation because a Quebec Superior Court judge denied the university's request for an injunction to dismantle the camp in May. He cited McGill's failure to show that there was an urgent need to dismantle the camp in his decision, despite the health and safety concerns raised by the university. On Thursday night, protesters rallied in Square Phillips to protest against the dismantlement of the McGill encampment. Over loudspeakers, police ordered protesters to disperse and called the protests unlawful. They then used tear gas and pepper spray on protesters that remained. The demonstration led to 1 arrest. For more, follow CJLO News on Spotify.
Back here on a very hot and sunny Monday, July the 15th. I'm Tommy Lane. This is the Tommy John Show, where every Monday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern on CGLO 1690 AM, where we discuss everything going on in the world of sports. Wow, what a weekend we had. If you're new to the program, This is the Tommy John Show. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, you name it, and every Monday here on CJLO 1690 AM. What a weekend we had in sports. Not only did we have the Wimbledon finals, the championship matches, we had the Euro Cup final yesterday. We had the Copa America final yesterday. We had a whole bunch of amazing things over the weekend and over the past week since our show last Monday. So we're going to get into all of it. We also have big news in the NFL as well as the NHL and the NBA. We will get all of it. We got the All-Star game for baseball tomorrow, the Home Run Derby tonight. And yeah, we're going to have a fun hour here on the Tommy John Show. So why don't we start, like we always do, with a quick recap of the past week in the world of sports. And we obviously have to start with the big soccer game last night, which is the Copa America. Argentina came in as the defending champions and the World Cup champions. That was their title and their distinction. They had the greatest player of all time, Lionel Messi. They had a deep squad. Finally, the problem was with Messi, oh, he can't really get over the top. You know, this Argentinian team's not good enough. Well, he had to be subbed off after 60-something minutes. And in extra time, Argentina get it done over Colombia 1-0 to win the Copa America yet again. The second time, and this is the first time ever that a team has won back-to-back Copa Americas with a World Cup in the middle. That is what Argentina just did last night, making soccer, I should say, football history. Unbelievable. So Lionel Messi went from a player who couldn't win with Argentina, was just the greatest club player ever, scored all the time, won everything you can with Barcelona, and couldn't get it done. And since then, he's won two Copa America, or the Finalissimo, whatever the one where they play the European champions. They beat Italy, won that, and then won a World Cup. So he has two Copa Americas, a World Cup, and was it the Finalissimo, I think it's called? And a span of 3 years. Four major international trophies in 4 years. In 3 years, sorry. Four in 3 years. Unbelievable, unbelievable stuff. And the real question is, will Lionel Messi be there for Argentina in 2 years' time to defend the World Cup? We shall see. We saw his ankle yesterday was as big as a balloon on the bench. So it'll be interesting to see. Colombia played unbelievable going into the final, though. They won 28-something games in a row around there, 30, 28 games in a row. Just fantastic playing by Colombia, and they'll be a huge threat in the World Cup if they get in. And then also the main final, maybe people, the bigger final of the two. We had the Euro Cup final yesterday. We had Spain looking for their fourth European title, their first since 2012. And England looking for their first ever European title. It was 0-0 at the break. Then, in the second half, the game broke wide, wide open. It started with a goal by Nico Williams to start the second half. Cole Palmer ties it 10, 15 minutes later. Then, in the 87th minute, this happened.
Olmo. We thought about Cucurella, 2-1 Spain. Oya Thorball, prompt, neat, telling. Time is running out, and Spain are nearly there.
Well, they have played beautiful football at times and incisive, and when they have, they've caused England problems. But to me, they look like they've got more energy. I can see some tired English players, as we mentioned earlier.
So that was the goal in the 87th minute. 87th minute, and man, what a time for England to concede. But to be fair, Spain, the whole tournament, you look who they played. They had to play Italy and Croatia in the groups. They beat both of them. Then they get through the round of 16, and then quarterfinals, they play Germany, semifinal France, final England. What, are you kidding me? What a road. You cannot have asked for a tougher road to win a European championship, and they did it. They have some great players. Lamine Yamal, he just turned 17. He's going to be unbelievable. Rodri's maybe the best midfielder in the world right now. But Nico Williams is young. Morata's been proven inconsistent. Cucurella doesn't even play a lot in the Prem. I don't know. And you look at England's side, it's just, man, talent everywhere you look. In the 86th minute, they take the lead, and then to cap it off.
Spain, champions of Europe yet again, and the best team won it. Once more, this zestful football nation has come to the party and danced the most beautiful dance. They are show business. They're young, they're fresh, they're free, they're champions, and England are crestfallen.
So this England dropping another major final. They went to the Euro final last time in London. The final was at Wembley. They lose to Italy. Then had the heartbreak at the World Cup against France in the quarterfinal. They came into the Euros as the favorites, and they fall short to Spain. We'll get more into that later in the show. We have to move on. We had Wimbledon over the weekend, and we had the final I think everyone wanted. We wanted a rematch of the epic last year between Novak Djokovic and Carlos Alcaraz. Alcaraz winning in five sets in dramatic fashion. The only major Djokovic did not win last year. He won the French last year. He won the Australian last year. Won the U.S. Open, and he lost the Wimbledon final to Alcaraz. This year, lost in the quarters, albeit he was a bit injured against Jannik Sinner. Had to pull out at the French Open because of that terrible knee injury. Sure enough, in a month span, he gets healthy enough to play. Had the brace on his knee, and he somehow got to the final where he met Carlos Alcaraz. And he was just too much for him. Carlos Alcaraz in straight sets. He even had triple match point at 5-4. Couldn't get it done. And I thought, oh boy, if Djokovic gets this set, Carlos Alcaraz might be in trouble. They go to a tiebreak. Alcaraz takes care of it. He has won his second Wimbledon title back-to-back. In his fourth major at the age of 21, he's won the U.S. Open, won the French a month ago, now has his second Wimbledon title. And he won't move up in the rankings. Jannik Sinner is still number one in the world because of the hot start he had at the beginning of this year. But two majors in a month and in 5 weeks, just an unbelievable part of the year for Carlos Alcaraz. I mean, I'm getting speechless of what this guy's doing at the age he's doing it. 21, he just turned 21, and he has four majors. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Next major, the U.S. Open, Labor Day weekend, but there is the Olympics in between. Novak Djokovic said he would want to play because it's the only thing he has not won is a singles gold medal. But just a stellar performance yesterday from Carlos Alcaraz. Here's the boys from ESPN talking about his performance yesterday.
As he did, but I mean, you got to be honest that he was just overmatched today against a younger, faster, more aggressive opponent. And it's, I think, something for Djokovic to have to think about. You know, can he withstand this and can he deal with this guy? Last year was a five-set loss, then he beats him in Cincinnati. But this one feels different.
Is this the kind of moment? So, your tennis mortality, you begin to think about it the match unfolded?
I'm sure he's been thinking about it for a while. He's been defeating Father Time remarkably well, and we're thankful that he even played. I didn't think he was going to play here. Most people didn't. But obviously, when you see a guy with that type of extraordinary talent and athletic ability, and you're 37 and he's 21, you're thinking, I don't know what the next couple of years is going to... Am I willing to sort of... Well, goodbye to Novak. Am I willing to put in the hard yards if that means I'm going to come up short every time?
Right.
This is the boys from ESPN John McEnroe, Patrick McEnroe, Chris Fowler, who had the call yesterday. That's an interesting point, whether Novak Djokovic is going to think about retirement. I mean, he's still the number two player in the world, and he made a Wimbledon final on one leg. But yesterday, it looked like, for the most part, that Alcaraz was on a different level. Now we understand Djokovic is coming off the injury. People didn't think he would play, and he made the final, which is extraordinary. But I don't know. It's an interesting conversation we'll get into later in the show. We also had the women's final over the weekend, and a thrilling three-set match, but we had Barbara Krejcikova winning her second Grand Slam title. She won the French Open in 2021. She just won her second Wimbledon title, beating the Italian Jasmine Paolini 6-2, 2-6, 6-4. Fantastic match. Paolini's been playing unbelievable tennis. She made the final of the French, final Wimbledon. And I'm sure if she keeps playing like this, she'll have a great chance at the U.S. Open. So we're going to get to a quick break. And when we come back, we will discuss the Euro Cup, what just happened over the weekend, what's next for England as they look to end that drought of not winning major tournaments. Their last major win in 1966, the World Cup. That is unbelievable. We'll get into that. We'll get into the home run derby tonight, who I like. And also, we had some big news in the NHL, which we will get to today on the program. I am Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors.
International Nuit d'Afrique offers 6 days of free concerts and activities for the whole family from July 16th to the 21st. Come to the Parterre du Quartier de Spectacle and on the Esplanade Tranquille. More than 100 concerts and activities, dance workshops, DJ sets, and much more. Also, don't miss the Timbuktu Market and savor exotic dishes. And there's more. The indoor concerts continue till July 21st. Program on festivalnuitdafrique.com.
Our talks about movies always start out with the best of intentions. Opinions are shared, debates develop, but then things get heated, words get said. Friendships are tested, disagreements break out. This is when the smackdown happens. Join us for our next epic grudge match, Sundays at 2 p.m., Cinema Smackdown, right here on CJLO 1690 AM.
Here on the Tommy John Show. Man, what a weekend we had. We had the two finals yesterday, Wimbledon final for both the men and the women. A lot of important baseball games. Now we're at the All-Star break, and the All-Star game for baseball used to be amazing because you actually cared, because the league that won the All-Star game hosted the World Series. And which we had this talk in February when it was around the NBA and NHL All-Star games. We're saying, man, does no one give a rip about All-Star games? The baseball All-Star game was always the one people look forward to. A, because it's summertime, nothing really on TV sports-wise except baseball. You get all the best players in the world, and the game means something. You draw big numbers. But now they took that away. It's not the case anymore. And I honestly think, if they want this game to survive and this weekend to survive, they're going to have to put it back because it makes sense. Put something on the line that they can care for, having home field advantage in the World Series. Home Run Derby tonight, which is probably more people might watch the Home Run Derby than the All-Star Game itself, if we're being honest. I mean, I always loved the Home Run Derby. I know now they put a big prize on it, and you know people are going to go nuts when you see these bombs just being ripped into the outfield. And because it was home run season, my feed was always just blowing up, like Instagram and Twitter, of just old Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire Home Run Derby things when they're just roided up and hitting bombs. Absolute bomb, like 500-foot home runs. We don't have that anymore. But just to think how entertaining that must be, just seeing these huge guys just rip baseballs into the outfield. Like, every pitch, it was gone. But yeah, it's still a fun event. Pete Alonso from the New York Mets, I mean, he loves this event. He would do anything to win. Like, it's crazy. And he's the favorite, heavy favorite at plus 300. Gunnar Henderson plus 380. Bobby Witt from the Kansas City Royals. They were in Boston this weekend. I watched a lot of that series between the Royals and the Red Sox. He is a baseball player, I tell you. They locked him up beginning of the season on a huge deal, like 12 years, 13 years around. And it's worth a look. Looking right now, the guy about a steal. He is a fantastic player. He's quick. He's batting well over 300. He's got some power. That's going to be a great contract for the Kansas City Royals. Marcell Ozuna, plus 475. Adolis Garcia, plus 575. Teoscar Hernandez from the Dodgers, plus 1,200. Jose Ramirez at plus 1,600. Alec Baum at plus 2,000. I don't know who's going to win. People keep saying Pete Alonso. What I saw from Bobby Witt Jr. over the weekend playing against the Red Sox, might throw some money on him because he's a hell of a baseball player. So, yeah, over the weekend we had two main tournaments. We had the Copa America and the Euro Cup. And shout out to Canada playing Uruguay as tough as they did in the bronze medal, I guess you can call it, game. They had the lead late, and then they lose on penalties. But to see how far we've come in such a short time that we're playing Uruguay, we're playing Argentina in the semifinal, we're playing those nations and playing them tough, just outstanding. And we have an automatic bid into the next World Cup. We don't have to worry about World Cup qualifying. We are in it. We're one of the host nations. Let's just focus on getting better. And if I'm being honest, Alphonso Davies and Jonathan David, they were fine, but they weren't the only player. They weren't carrying the team on their shoulders. We had a lot of great players, like Kone. Unbelievable how he played the last few games. Look at Johnston. He one of the best fullbacks in the tournament. Was it the Maritime Messi, Schaffelberg? He had, against several teams, he was fantastic. And yes, we don't have the experience of those nations like an Argentina, like a Uruguay, like a Colombia, like a Brazil, but to take Uruguay to penalties and to play Argentina twice in the tournament and play them tough and have chances, you can't ask for much more. If you were to tell me before the tournament Canada would make the semifinal, I would have laughed. So there's no chance Canada makes the semifinals. So for that alone, getting to the Final Four, I'm very, very proud. And I'm excited that we have two more years to fill up the squad, find some younger talent as well, and see what we got. And see if we can put a good product on the field for the World Cup. And maybe even make it to the knockout stage of the World Cup. You never know. You never know. So over on the other side of the pond in Europe, there was this big final yesterday in Berlin, Spain 2-1 over England. And what is going on in England with the media and the sports talk and everything, it is just absolute mayhem over there. Because not only on paper are England maybe the best side in the world, I mean, you look at the squad they had. It was unbelievable. Harry Kane, Phil Foden, Jude Bellingham, Cole Palmer, Trent Alexander-Arnold's on the bench. He's maybe the best right back in the world. He's not even playing. Let me just go through that squad. Outrageous amount of talent. And yet, they lose their second final, Euro final in a row. Quarterfinal exit, last World Cup. And usually when a country makes it to a final, you're like, I wish we would have won, but man, we made it to a final. So there's some positives. England played shocking soccer, or football, I should say, in this tournament with the talent they had. Shocking. They were awful in the group stage. Just dreadful. And then they almost went out to Slovakia. They needed what was like 95th minute extra time. Jude Bellingham scores an absolute world-class goal to force it to extra time. And then Harry Kane scores an extra time to go on. That was against Slovakia. They needed penalties to beat Switzerland. Penalties against Switzerland. And then against the Dutch, they conceded first. Then got a lucky penalty, in my opinion. A very lucky penalty to tie the game. And they played decent for 45 minutes in the second half to get past a very mediocre Dutch team. There's no Van Persie. There's no Iron Robin on this Dutch team. There isn't. Van Dijk is maybe the best center back in the world, or up there. Memphis Depay is fine. But he had to come off with injury. Cody Gakpo, I'm a Liverpool guy. He's a nice player. He's not world class. It wasn't an all-time great Dutch team. There's no Johan Cruyff in the team. Like, let's calm down. They get through in a 90th, late goal. Was it 90th minute, 89th minute, around there? Okay, you get to the final on the easiest side of the draw I've ever seen. If they were on the other side of the draw that Spain was on, when they had to play Germany, England would have lost to Germany. They had to play France. France played shocking soccer, too. But I think France beats them. And we saw yesterday, even though it was 2-1, the difference in, I don't want to say strategy, but of just the style of play. England, with the amount of talent they had, are sitting back, trying to play counter-attacking soccer or football. I keep trying to catch myself. Against Spain. And Spain, to their credit, they by far were the best team in the tournament. They had the hardest group with them, Croatia, Italy. They won every single match. They went 7-0, which hasn't happened for a long time. They showed the graphic yesterday on SportsCenter. They beat Croatia, beat Italy, beat Germany, beat France, beat England. Who else could they have played? Well, they didn't play Portugal. Portugal stunk against France. That was a terrible game. So they played pretty much anyone. If you list the favorites in the tournament, they played them all, and they beat them all fair and square. They were just on another level this tournament. And if you look at the squad of Spain, yes, they have great players, but England's, on paper, I think, a much better team. Like, Lamine Yamal's going to be unbelievable. He just turned 17. Nico Williams is going to be a really good player. He's, what, 21, 22? Morata, remember when he got brought in to Chelsea, he was supposed to be the next big thing. He did absolutely nothing. He's fine in the national team for Spain. Like, he just does his job. He's not a quality striker. He's not Harry Kane. He's not, like, you look on paper, the only players who maybe get into the team for England from Spain is Rodri for sure. Does Yamal start over Saka? I don't know. At least now, I don't know. And then Nico Williams probably starts, and that's it. So you have max three players for Spain. Make it on paper into the England side. And it didn't matter, because they had a system, Spain. They had a style of play. and they stuck to it. And that's really what all it comes down to. They had a style. We like to control the ball. We're going to push it. We're going to play quick. And we're going to play solid defense. And there you go. Where England, it felt like every game, it was just boring and shocking. And with the amount of firepower they have, you think they're going to play aggressive front foot, we're better than you style of soccer. And that's not what happened. And I know people think he's a great coach in Gareth Southgate, but he is taking it in the shins in England right now, overseas. I'm telling you, even throughout the group stage, people I was following, they wanted him out. They're like, this is abysmal. And they weren't in a Spain, Italy, Croatia group. Did you see England's group in the group stage? Absolutely shocking. Like, are you kidding me? They played Serbia. Okay, they're decent. Beat Serbia 1-0. They tied Denmark 1-1. And Slovenia 0-0. Just shocking. Like, what's going on here? And it all comes down to the coach. Look at that squad yesterday. Harry Kane, Jude Bellingham, Phil Foden, Saka, Declan Rice, Luke Shaw. You just look at the players on the bench. Cole Palmer's on the bench. Trent Alexander-Arnold's on the bench. Think about the players they didn't even take to the tournament. I know Grealish is not in form, but he went for $100 million. He's not even in the squad. It's just, I don't know how. I'm not educated enough to know the workings of the English national team. I'm not from England. I've only been to Heathrow. I haven't been to London or been to a Premier League match. I don't know the. I just watched the Prem from my couch and support Liverpool. I'm not that educated on the English national team and the interworkings and the politics behind it. I am not. But I don't know how they can sit today after losing two finals in a row, two very winnable finals, in my opinion. I know Spain played great the whole time. On paper, you're better than them. And that Italy team that won the Euro Cup, they weren't that great for Italian team standards. Their best player was their goalie. Like, that's two finals dropped. Two golden chances missed. And you played Italy at home. It was at Wembley. And guess where the next Euro is? It's the UK and Ireland are hosting. Well, guess where the final is going to be? Wembley again. And you're going to go into another World Cup with this world-class squad. And I bet they're going to keep Southgate. I just have a feeling. I feel like he just does what the board says. And in return, he gets to keep his job. But I can't, the way they played so negatively, so, I can't even describe. When you look at the lineup, you think they're going to play like Man City, Pep Guardiola soccer. No. We're going to play this slow, negative, defensive style against Spain. Maybe I can tolerate it. Maybe. I still don't, but maybe. But when they're playing Slovakia and Slovenia and Serbia and Switzerland, these countries that you are miles better than, and you play that style, it's like you're trying to win on penalties, is a joke. And yesterday, a lot of pundits, or England fans, I should say, thought they had a good chance. They're like, oh, look, on paper, we're better than them. We should beat them. I have a feeling. What feeling? Did you not watch you guys for the last month? Spain played Germany, Italy, Croatia, France before playing you guys. And won straight up. No penalties needed for them. Straight up. 90 minutes. I guess Germany went to extra time. No penalties needed. They played the best teams in the tournament. Straight up beat them. No penalties over Switzerland. No extra time against Slovakia. None of that. Negative style soccer. It was 1-1 against Germany. What, in the 119th, 118th minute? Some teams just like, you know, we're going to play for penalties. They went for it, and they got a late goal. That's who Spain are. They went out, played unreal competition. A lot of teams would complain about the bracket they're in. We're on the tough side. England's got a cakewalk to the final. Not Spain. They just go out, play their style, and win. So when people ask me beforehand, who's going to win, Spain or England? Are you kidding me? Yesterday, when Spain scored first, England made some subs, played aggressive, got the equalizer, and then played defensive again. They had Spain, they went after Spain for a little bit because they needed a goal. And they got one. A brilliant goal from Cole Palmer. Brilliant. But come on. Once you have them on the ropes like that, they were all over them for that 10-minute span, 5-minute span, and then they sit back and let Spain have the ball. They weather the storm and then get them on the counter. Oh, I don't know how he keeps his job today. It's been too many missed opportunities for this England side. Too many. And I know England fans who wanted him out after the World Cup. 2 years ago, people wanted him out. They said, no, give him another chance. Give him another chance. And you think about what this guy has done. The penalty shootout against Italy. He lets like 3 19-year-olds go. He lets Saka go when he's like 19, take a penalty. Jadon Sancho was, what, 20? He's putting all these babies on to take penalties in the biggest games of their life. They're nervous. Doesn't put Grealish in the penalty shootout. Doesn't put Luke Shaw or any of those guys, the veterans. No, he's like, going to put in Sancho. Going to put in Saka, who are just children for the biggest moment. What is he thinking? And then against France, World Cup, they need subs. They're tired. Doesn't he subs on Grealish when like the 92nd minute? What's that going to do? He's a negative manager, hasn't done anything. Okay, you've gone to finals, but how many chances are you going to get before you don't get the... If he was the manager of Croatia or a smaller country, God bless him. He's done an amazing job. But this is England. This is the biggest... This is the country that created the game. Have the biggest league in the world, in the Premier League. Losing finals is just losing big games, what they do. And it's shocking. So I said we get some big news in the NHL. Patrick Laine, a lot of trade calls have been coming in for him. And they want to get rid of him. He doesn't fit what Columbus is trying to do. He's got, $8.7 million cap hit. On a terrible team. Yeah, we're going to move that deal. We want to create cap space. Now, in all fairness to Patrick Laine, I'm sure he's a nice guy. Unbelievable talent. He's a big guy, has a rocket of a shot. But I've never seen a guy care less than him. Maybe Pierre-Luc Dubois, some shifts. But he's right there. And it's funny that they were traded for each other. I remember before the draft in 2016. It was between Matthews and Laine. And a lot of people said, oh, Laine is going to be the 50-goal scorer, 60-goal scorer. How can he not? You saw what he did at the World Juniors. He basically, I know looking back on it, that was an unreal Finland team in the World Juniors. But Laine was miles the best player on that team that won. Miles. He looked like this guy was going to be an absolute stud. And he did. He had a 40-goal season as a rookie. He looked amazing in Winnipeg. People were like, here we go. Patrick Laine. What a disappointment. Seriously. He will be in the league for a few more years for sure. A lot longer just because he's so damn talented. And just without even trying, he'll score, if healthy, 25 goals. Which will keep you in the NHL for a long time. But to think if he actually cared or try hard, he could be one of the best goal scorers in the league. The talent he had, and he still has, is unbelievable. And you can say every reason why he's been on bad teams, which is not true. Winnipeg made the playoffs when he was there. Yeah, I know Columbus is a dumpster fire, but come on. He reminds me a lot of Jay Cutler. A little football, hockey analogy for you. They are essentially the same to me. They kept getting new contracts and staying in the league because they're just so talented. Jay Cutler had one of the best arms in the league. Can make every throw. So he's good enough to stay in the league and get decent contracts. But you're not going to win with him. And they just don't care. I even look at Patrick Laine. He just doesn't care. And you can say it's Columbus, Columbus all you want. Baloney. Why did they trade you out of Winnipeg then? Why are they going to trade you out of Winnipeg? And Columbus. Think about it. Why? It's not because you're not talented, not because you're not capable. You're capable of scoring 40, 50 goals a season. Teams should be falling all over themselves, just salivating to get Patrick Laine, if he cared. Why is it taking this long to get him? Because teams are hesitant. Some team will be like, oh, we'll throw a fifth maybe. Max a third. But the reason it's taking this long is Columbus like, hello, we have Patrick Laine. And the team's like, yeah, we know. He'll be there. No one's rushing to get him. Now, if he's on a line in like Edmonton, could he, playing with McDavid, could he score a ton of goals? Yes. But the problem is, he won't care. And it's crazy. The amount of players that would kill to have Patrick Laine's talent, maybe just because it was too easy for him. Even coming in the NHL, he's just this monster with a rocket of a shot. This guy's a can't-miss player. It was legitimately, no one knew it was going to be him or Matthews who went first. Toronto saying they make the right choice. Damn right they did. And at the time, if you were to ask me, I'm like, yeah, I'd probably take Matthews, but it's close. Like, this Laine guy is a giant, has already one of the best shots in the league. Like, what are we doing? He's a can't-miss pick. But I didn't know he was like this. My God. It's just really, really poor. And they're like, yeah, we got suitors. Columbus, yeah, teams are calling about Laine. Yeah. Or are you calling them about Laine? Saying we want him the hell out of here. We don't want 8.7 on our books for that effort. And Columbus is not winning for a while. They don't want that attitude to trickle down to their younger players. They have Fantilli there. They have Johnston there. Look, they got young players. Werenski. Like, let's calm down. We don't want this guy. We're not going to be good for a while, so we don't want this guy to set an example to these younger kids. Just shocking. I just can't believe Patrick Laine. Now, there's rumors Montreal might go get him. Okay. Edmonton, if I was Edmonton or Colorado or a team with like a legit superstar who cares and wants to win more than anything, and you can get Laine for 2 years, like Laine would score. If Hyman scored 50, how do you think Laine would score with McDavid? And it wouldn't because he'd care, just because he'd be on the ice. And you can take a shot on him, sure. But to say he'll put in the effort and that he'll care, I don't know about that. I'm not sure. I'm not sold. He's been a disappointment since coming into the league. He scored 40 once, maybe twice. early in his career, and what has he done since? You can say injuries, you can say all these other things, baloney. I've seen some shifts with him when he's playing with Johnny Gaudreau, and he's just gliding around, not back-checking, not caring, and it's poor. It's really poor. Some games you see him on the power play with that shot, you're like, this guy's an elite player. And then the next minute, you can't even notice him. You're like, where the hell is this guy? He's a ghost? Just unbelievable, man. What could have been? Seriously. And I know Winnipeg, when he was there, there was a lot of other good players, and maybe he wasn't the focal point. He still scored 40. I don't want to hear about no focal point. GM today. Oh, yeah, teams are calling on Line A. I wouldn't go near him. If your team like Edmonton, they sign like a Jeff Skinner who got a big contract bought out. I don't think Columbus is going to buy him out. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe. But a team like that, okay. Colorado, Vegas, you can play with Jack Eichel. Okay. But a team like Montreal or Buffalo or... Why? For him to disappear? Crazy. We're going into a quick ad. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the NFL and my predictions a month out from training camp. I'm Tommy Lane for Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors.
Édition du Festival international du d'Afrique vous offre 6 jours de concerts et activités gratuites pour toute la famille du 16 au 21 juillet. Rendez-vous au parterre du quartier de spectacle et sur l'esplanade tranquille. Au programme, plus d'une centaine de concerts et animations, des ateliers de danse, des DJ sets et bien plus encore. Aussi, ne manque pas le marché Tombouctou et le promenade de saveur. Et ce n'est pas tout, les concerts en salle continuent jusqu'au dimanche 21 juillet. Programmation sur festivalnudafrique.com.
If you like served with a side of a little bit of and a heaping helping of then you're gonna love BVST, your best and worst of rock and roll, country, punk and metal. Every Wednesday from 7 to 9, right here on CJLO 1690 AM.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. So it is officially football season. I am declaring it. The reason why? New college video game drops Friday. We've waited 10 years for that. There's videos from NFL teams of players running routes, throwing passes, and I declare that it's football time. I know we're not at training camp yet, but in this month, in 2.5-3 weeks, it will be a camp, and we can officially declare football season here. But I'm doing it early. I'm saying it is here. So when you look at rankings and where you think teams are going to finish, people just look on paper, which is fine. You can look at paper and say, all right, you got Mahomes, a quarterback. You got Kelsey. They added Xavier Worthy from Texas. You got the Chiefs are going to be the one seed. That's fine. You can do that. But I like to take it a step further, because how you determine your record is based on who you play. And teams just sitting here and saying, oh, the Chiefs are going to be the one seed. Thank you for coming. Maybe. I'm not saying there's a strong possibility in that, but you have to check who the teams are playing. And each year you got to swap conferences. One year you play the NFC West. Next year you play the NFC East. Next year you play the NFC South. It switches. Then if you finish higher up, you get harder matchups. That's how it goes. So when you look at who you think's going to make the playoffs, at least when I do, when we're in July, August, September, who I think the one seeds and the two seeds are going to be, I look at the schedule. Not to win the Super Bowl. I'm saying to determine the seeding, what I think the seeds will be, I have to look at the schedule. And last year, I said, boy, you want, like, people going crazy about the Eagles going to win the NFC. I said the second half of their schedule. I remember sitting in this exact chair around this time last year. I said, the Eagles, yep, they're going to be a playoff team. But this, I said, what? That schedule is brutal. Where the year before, yes, Jalen Hurts was at MVP-level quarterback. They had the best O-line. And A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith was blossoming. I said, yes, they went to a Super Bowl, and damn, they have an argument. They got screwed out of a Super Bowl. But that schedule was awful. Like, who'd they play? Seriously, who'd they play? Like, that year, they lost to Washington, people forget. When they were, what, 10-0, 9-0? Well, I forget what number they got to before they lost the game. And they went to a Super Bowl, so I can't knock them. But I said, to act like the Eagles are just, yeah, locked them in for 13, 14 wins because they're the Eagles and they did that last year. I said, no. That second half of the schedule was awful. They had to play San Francisco, Dallas, Kansas City. They had a brutal schedule. Brutal. And what happened down the stretch last year? They were getting destroyed. They limped into the playoffs. And they go play Tampa Bay, and they got dismantled by Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers. So it matters. It absolutely matters. Like, is Kansas City going to make the playoffs? Yes. Is Baltimore going to make the playoffs? I think so, yes. Are the Bills, the Dolphins? Yeah, I think they're going to make the playoffs. Do I know where they're going to be seeded? No, I don't. So here I go. I'm going to list what I think the seedings are going to be for next year, just quickly. We'll put the ESPN primetime music, and I'm going to explain why I think these teams are going to finish where they are. Like a little NFL primetime music. In the AFC, one team I think that's not going to be in a good spot is the Cleveland Browns. I'm immediately going to throw them to the side. They were a playoff team last year, but if you look at their schedule, my goodness. They open with Dallas. They're at Jacksonville, a healthy Jacksonville team. They play Philadelphia. Obviously, the Bengals, that division's brutal. They play the Bengals. Baltimore, this is the start of the year. Baltimore, San Diego, remember at LA, New Orleans, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Cincinnati, Miami, Baltimore again. This is a brutal schedule. So I'm taking Cleveland out of the race for the number one seed. Their defense is stellar. I know Deshaun Watson's coming back. They're not in the hunt. Another team I'm not going to put in the hunt. You're going to think I'm crazy. Baltimore. Tommy, Baltimore is amazing. I know Baltimore is amazing, but that schedule, they open with the Chiefs, then they have Dallas, Buffalo, Cincinnati, Tampa Bay who made the playoffs last year, Cleveland, Cincinnati again, at Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Steelers again, at Houston. Cincinnati, Cleveland, these are just brutal games. And even if it's the same team as last year, hell, even if they get better, you're not going to win all those games. I think they're a playoff team. They're going to be a 12-11 win team. But to win whatever, how many games they won last year, 14, I just don't see it. Here's an interesting one. How about the New York Jets? Everyone's saying Aaron Rodgers is back. The Jets are going to, you know, they improve their O-line. They got an amazing defense. Number one seed, eh? Look at this schedule. They open the year. New O-line. Aaron Rodgers coming off Achilles injury at San Francisco on Monday night. Ouch. Then fine. Tennessee, we don't know. New England's going to stink. Denver, you're coasting. Then it gets pretty bad. You got Buffalo at Pittsburgh, Houston, Miami, Seattle, the Rams, Buffalo again, Miami, Indianapolis. Those are tough games. End of the year. I'm telling you, you got to play Miami, who I think is really good, and you have the, at least, you'd say, oh, can we draw them at the end of the year? Maybe. But when you play Buffalo, you play Miami twice, you play Houston, you play San Francisco, that's just a bad schedule. And I'm not a Jets hater. I'm just saying you're coming off an Achilles injury. The O-line's not great. You're playing very good pass rushes. We'll see what happens. So, who I like for the one seed, who I think has a very good chance, is Kansas City, as always. And, you're going to laugh at me, Houston. It all depends on who you play, right? The Chiefs, for a Super Bowl champion, to have this kind of a schedule, is kind of, I won't say unfortunate, but very, very lucky. Yes, they open the year with Baltimore and Cincinnati, but they have the fortune of playing the NFC South. So it's New Orleans. It's Atlanta. It's Carolina. It's Tampa Bay, who would be their probably their toughest game. But then you look, Denver, Cleveland, the Raiders, the Panthers. Just a lot of porous teams. Like the Chargers, we don't know. I think they'll be good, but meh. They play. It's not an easy schedule, but for the Super Bowl champions, to play Carolina, to play New Orleans, to play the Raiders twice, that's pretty easy for them. And also, the Houston Texans. We all saw last year, yes, on paper, they're going to be great. For a schedule, I feel like they lucked out pretty good. I really do. Indianapolis, they play the Bears, they play the Vikings, the Jaguars, the Patriots, Jets, Titans, Jaguars, Titans again. Then they do have the Kansas City game, which is tough. They have a Baltimore game on Christmas. But besides that, those are the only really two tough games I see. Really tough. Indy's going to be better. I'm not saying that. The Bears are going to be better. I'm not saying that. The Vikings are going to be better. I'm not saying that. But come on. Their toughest games is what? Not as good as a Bills team on paper. Kansas City, Baltimore at the end of the year. Every other game, I don't know. At the Jets, not that tough of a game. I'm sorry. So that's why right now, we'll do the NFC next week. The two teams, I think, one seed, Houston, Kansas City, just based off that schedule. I know injuries play a factor, but you look at those two schedules for the caliber teams they are, like the AFC North's just too tough. They play all those teams twice a year. That'll do it for this week's episode. I'm Tommy Lane for Tommy John Show. Appreciate you all for listening. We're back next Monday, July the 22nd. We'll recap everything that goes on in the world of sports. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.